This is Kay Eccleston. It is April 1st, 2011. I am at the home of Gert Flynn, and we're here to conduct her oral history interview for the Gathering Project. So, Gert, if you would just like to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Anaconda, Irish descent, all Irish. And I'm going to be 91 years old next couple of weeks, April 16th. I was a registered nurse, went to Catholic school, graduated in 39, and graduated from Columbus Hospital. And then I was in World War II with the Army Nurse Corps in California for a year, and overseas in the South Pacific, in New Guinea, Biak, and the Philippines for 2 years.
Okay.
When I came out, then I went to work at Fort Harrison, got married, and have lived in Anaconda ever since.
Okay.
And were nursed around, started home nursing in Anaconda, and I worked at Head Start for 17 years where I retired.
Okay.
And I worked at Old St. Anne's Hospital and did private duty nursing.
Okay. And would you like to tell us a little bit about your immediate family life, when you were married, something about your children?
Well, I was married in 1947, and my oldest son was born in 48, had a son born and in 49 that died at birth, and my husband was killed in 1951 in a truck pickup accident coming from Anaconda to Butte. We're coming from Butte to Anaconda with oil. He had gone over and gotten oil drums.
Okay.
And he was killed, and I was pregnant with twins at that time. And they were born in July. My folks died that 2 months after my husband was killed. My folks died of heart attacks within 20 minutes of each other.
Oh my goodness.
And the twins were born then after they died.
Okay.
And then I was a widow for 8 years with two children. Then I married Tom Flynn in 1958. And we had a daughter in 59. And he died of a heart attack in 61.
Okay.
And I've been a widow ever since and raised my four children alone.
Okay.
Practically.
And your first husband's name was?
George Martin.
George Martin.
And he was a pilot in World War II. He had made 74 missions over the South Pacific and come home and died then in a pickup accident.
Oh. Yeah, some things are so ironic.
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
You see.
Were either of your spouses of Irish descent?
Both of them. Tom was a full-blooded Irish. My second husband, George, was three-fourths Irish. He had a fourth of Scotch in him.
Okay.
His grandmother was Scotch. She was born in Scotland.
Okay. Okay. Do you know anything about when your ancestors left
Ireland?
Came over. And
this
would have been your grandparents?
Yeah, my grandparents would have come. They came over in the 1880s. I would say it would have been in 1880s. During the 1880s, and my grandfather came first, my maternal grandfather, James O'Neill, and he worked at the mines in Virginia City. Then he sent for his my grandmother, and she and my mother's older sister, who was would have been about 5 years old when they came over, and would have been about 1986, I think, or 84, or around in there.
Okay.
And they came to Virginia City. And then my mother was born in Virginia City in 1890. And they came when my mother was 4 years old. They left Virginia City by covered wagon, came to Anaconda. He was going to work in the mines in Butte. And my grandmother contacted typhoid fever on the way, and she died shortly after they came to Anaconda.
Oh.
And my mother then and my aunt, her older sister, were raised by an aunt and uncle.
Okay.
Here in Anaconda, and they came, my uncle came, and my aunt was born that raised my mother. She was born in County Clare, and she came to, her family came to Pittsburgh. My uncle, Jim Lappin, they came to Pittsburgh, and they met in Pittsburgh auntie and uncle, he was a conductor on a streetcar there. And then they came to Anaconda before my mother did. Okay. And so they lived here, had their home here.
Okay. So this aunt and uncle who ended up raising your mother
were
living here.
Yes.
And then your grandfather with his sister-in-law and daughter moved to Anaconda.
My grandfather with mother. My grandmother died in Anaconda, then a typhoid fever.
Okay.
And my grandfather just went to work in Butte.
Okay.
In the mines. And of course, in those days, there were no cars. So my mother and aunt didn't get to see him an awful lot, and I think he was an alcoholic too. He drank a lot. And he was killed in the mines when my mother was in high school.
Okay.
So they were definitely raised by my aunt and uncle, James and Mariah. Her maiden name was Mariah McCarthy.
Okay.
That came from Santa Clara. But they met in Pittsburgh, her and uncle.
Okay, and from Pittsburgh they came out here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear why they settled in Pittsburgh?
It's an awful lot came from that. No, I don't know why really, but I couldn't tell you why they settled in New York or Boston either, but I think they were close to New York, and they all came through on boat by to New York.
Okay.
And I think they went to where they could get work.
Yeah.
Or had relatives, one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of had that community.
I think those
are
the two reasons why they settled in this country.
Okay, okay. Do you know anything about these ancestors' lives in Ireland?
They were very, very hard. They came from, most of my mother's family and all came from County Antrim. And they really had a hard time. It was kind of in the northern end, more or less, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they just were very, very poor. Poverty, you might as well say. It was during the potato famine.
Mm-hmm.
And the English treated them terrible if they were Catholics. They didn't give them work. They couldn't go to school and all that stuff. And they really didn't talk a lot about Ireland because of that reason, I think. And they were, I think my uncle's family, I think the couple, the men were in the IRA.
Oh, okay.
My uncle was blackballed from the Hill for sending money back to the IRA.
Oh.
And he was just fortunate that he knew Bill Jones, who was a commissioner, and he hired him at the courthouse. And he became an engineer and just retired, lived there for years, worked there for years, and then retired.
Okay. Oh, that's.
And I think their older brother was really with the IRA.
Oh.
And I think he escaped being sent to Australia. They never talked a lot about it. Little things would come up, you know.
Right.
But
right.
They really were poor in Ireland.
Okay.
Had a very hard life.
Right. So most likely, like a lot of other immigrants, came to the United States too.
Right.
For a better way of life.
Better way of life.
Yeah.
And the one thing that my uncle used to really thought was the greatest thing in America was public schools.
Oh.
That everyone was given the opportunity to go to school.
And probably.
You can imagine how it was, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if that's something that you didn't have an opportunity
and
to
the
do.
Other thing they did in those days, too, was this town was full of cabins. People who had to help would buy a home, they'd have a cabin in the back.
Mm-hmm.
For the people, they would send for people to Ireland. Then when they came here, they'd have a place to stay, the men especially.
Okay.
And would board them. My aunt and uncle had boarders, a couple that came from Ireland. Coley Mullen's father was one.
Oh.
And they came here, and then they'd get work on the Hill, and they'd get to go on their own, get married and stuff.
Oh. Interestingly enough, Coley Mullen is kind of a short-tailed relative of mine.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, his father was, I can remember my mother and aunt talking about him when he came from Ireland. He rented a room from auntie and uncle.
I see. Do you know anything about, your maiden name was?
My maiden name was Reardon.
Was Reardon. And do you know anything about, did the name or the spelling or anything about it change once?
Well, they often wondered whether we spelled it at one time R-I-O-R-D-A-N, and we spell it R-E-A-R-D-O-N.
Okay.
So they did wonder about that. But they, my uncle, my grandfather Reardon was always, they don't know if he was born in England or Ireland.
Okay.
We do know that his family, though, came from Ireland, his mother and dad. And we don't know if they came to England and then had him or if he was a baby when they went to England.
Okay.
He was a sailor in English ship.
Oh.
When he came. And he was came here a couple of years before. He was older than my grandmother. Okay. She was born in Pittsburgh, though. Her name was Fox.
Okay. Okay.
I always thought there was a little Jew in that family. I don't know.
Oh, just because of the name.
Just because of the name, but we were, people always thought, one of my uncles, they were all short.
I see. I think that's not unusual for someone maybe to have a name that has a traditional Irish spelling, and then here it gets changed a little bit, so it's easier to pronounce.
Mac, yeah. You know, a lot of them dropped the Mac.
Right,
and stuff.
Right, yeah, okay. What about naming traditions in your family? I mean, are there any name, you know, like...
We were always named after...
You were named after so-and-so?
They were named after saints, and we were named after them.
I see.
You had to have a saint's name to be baptized a Catholic.
Okay. So, were you named after anyone
family? Yeah, my grandmother's father's mother's, her name was Amelia Gertrude.
Okay.
And then his sister, that my dad was the oldest of 12 children, and then his sister Gertrude was next, and she was a nun.
Okay.
An Ursuline nun, and I was named really, I think, after
her. Okay.
I was named Gertrude Ann, yeah.
Okay.
But my mother always said you're named after St. Gertrude and St. Ann.
I see. So maybe if we could, maybe what we'll do is... talk a little bit, maybe we'll kind of go chronologically.
Okay.
So maybe we'll move to like maybe the time frame during which you grew up in Anaconda. And if you could tell us a little bit about some of your childhood memories of Anaconda.
Well, when I can remember as a child, it was quite active around here. And as I told you, my mother and them belonged to the Hibernians.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish kind of really got together a lot. And once a year they'd have a big picnic. I can remember that was a big thing for us kids. We went by train down to Gregson, we always called it
Fairmont.
And that's
now,
where
yes.
The picnic was, yeah. And then my dad was quite active. He was the first county clerk and recorder elected here. He was only 21 years old, but he was the first youngest ever elected at that time. And so he belonged to quite a few things. So we went to a lot of things, you know, clubs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Depression came, they kind of dropped all that.
Okay.
That's how they dropped out. But we used to go out to the Washoe Park, I can remember, with the wagon and the buggy on the 4th of July. And they'd have a band out there, and everybody in town would go. Big picnic. And there'd be prizes for the largest families and all that stuff.
I see.
And it seemed your neighbors, a lot of children in the neighborhood, we'd go out and play at night, you know. Then when the lights came on at night, it was your warning to get home.
Ah, yeah, that famous Anaconda phrase from mothers, come in when the street lights come on.
Yeah, that was, you had to be home then.
Yeah.
And you were very, neighbors helped one another. There weren't a lot of... welfare stuff or anything going on. If a person died, the wakes, you know,
mm-hmm.
The people brought food to them, everybody and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Or if somebody had hit hard times, you had raffles, and so they would raffle off something, give them money.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Brown's mother and Pat Brown, who are both priests, I don't know, did you know them?
No, I didn't.
Father Brown's, Father Tony, and then Father Pat.
I remember a Father Brown from visiting it when we were in grade school, but I don't.
Tony Brown was very, he graduated around the time, was a year older than me.
Uh-huh.
It's a very brilliant fellow. He just died here not long ago. He was went to Butte. Well, she was a widow, and her husband left Anaconda to find work. It was during the, and he they never heard from him again. And they used to bum, they called it, get on the trains and gold places because they didn't have the money.
Yes.
And they think maybe he was killed somehow during that. And just nobody ever knew, you know.
Oh, during his travels.
And she was having a very hard time. They had a raffle for her. Collins did. He had a business, raffled off a stove. And it was enough money to buy her a little house for her and the boys.
Oh, okay.
People did things like that.
Kind of that, you know, advantage of having a small town community, mm-hmm. I suppose, yeah.
Always very good to people, you know.
Yeah.
Less fortunate. Everybody was kind of in the same boat, more or less.
Right. During your childhood, you said there were lots of kids in the neighborhoods and stuff. What do you recall as a child doing for entertainment or for fun?
Well, we used to go out, like I said, on the streets. We'd play kick the can. There were no cars. We'd play kick the can. No bears out tonight. You go and hide places, you know. Pretend you were bears and stuff like that. And we used to play ball,
mm-hmm.
get out and play ball, go hiking. We did a lot of hiking in those days, too. Kids did. They would hike over to Lost Creek.
Oh, okay.
Go over to, take a lunch and go over to Lost Creek, do things like that. And then there was a swimming pool at the park for the summer, an old swimming pool. We'd go out there until polio came along, then you had to be real careful.
Oh.
Things of that, like that. Uh-huh. And skating, always skating, ice skating.
Right. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've heard a lot of people kind of remember that really fondly.
Very.
Just the fact that the crowds mm-hmm. of young people and adults down at the skating rink.
The common, and even up here now where I live, was a swamp, and they used to flood it up around here, too, and we'd come up. And then where your folks were over at the park, ballpark we called it,
mm-hmm.
we would go to the baseball games and stuff there, the football games, things like that, grade school. Parents never went to games like they do now. It was
really?
All kids.
Oh.
And they never interfered with your kids. I mean, you had coaches, and they took care, and that's how you did things.
Oh, so there weren't a lot of parents in the bleachers, huh?
No, because they were working on the hill.
Right.
And there was big families.
Yeah. Anything else stand out in your mind as far as, like, you know, even, you know, like on into junior high or high school, what you did, you know, might have done for entertainment or fun?
Oh, yeah, we went to AIDS. They had, in high school, they had AIDS, the St. Peter's and St. Paul's. And there was an aid on Wednesday nights, and they'd have a little band. And you'd go, you'd play cards. Mothers and fathers would go and play cards. Kids would all go, and we'd have a dance after.
Oh.
Till midnight. And we did a lot of that. And the Elks would have dances, the Eagles and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in high school, we'd go to those on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. We'd go and play cards, too, because you got a lunch. You played cards, then you got a lunch for 2 bits, and then the dance. And then the boys would come. And we'd go like the Palm and the Arctic on Main Street. They had sodas.
Like ice cream parlors?
And we'd go there and meet there, you know.
Oh, okay.
Kind of meeting places like the kids did. You kids at Bill's places.
Oh, like Bill's Drive-In. Yeah. Right. I've heard of the Arctic Ice Cream Parlor, but I didn't. I was never.
And the Palm was down on East Park too. It was another place.
Oh.
Get 10-cent hamburgers and 5-cent cokes.
Oh.
Of course, the theater was only 10. We went to a lot of movies.
Okay.
10 cents to the theaters.
Right. When you were growing up, was it the same location where the Washoe is
no,
now?
No, the Washoe was built when I was in about 7th or 8th grade. The Bluebird we went to.
And that was on Park Street?
Security Bank, yes. Okay. It was called the Bluebird.
Okay.
And then they had another one down where, on 400 block on East Park. There was another theater, it was in Imperial or something it was called.
Okay.
But it was when I was very, very young, and then they closed that.
Okay.
Don't remember too much about it, although I do remember going to a movie there once as a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years old, I think I was, or so.
Okay. What as far as, you know, like, say, in your immediate family, you know, what did you do for entertainment? I know there was no television.
We had a piano at home. We had a piano. And we used to put my oldest sister that was killed could play by ear.
Oh, okay.
She used to play along. She'd play different songs, and we'd go in and sing and stuff like that, sit around, and then you'd have parties on your birthday and all that kind of stuff. Then the radio did come, you know. Mm-hmm. We had an old Victrola, too, that you had great big records you used to play.
Okay.
And then when the radios came, of course, we got a radio, and we'd listen to that all the time. They'd have big bands on the radio and stuff. Okay. Get together and sit and listen to that. And then they had, like, different plays and stuff on the radio
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that you always listened to. Ma Perkins, I can remember Ma Perkins and Widow Brown and those kind of opera things like they have on TV.
Okay, okay. Well, because your family had, you had musicians in the family, was anyone interested in traditional Irish music or popular Irish music?
Oh,
or was
yeah,
it mostly...
what we sang was Irish songs.
Okay.
Because you knew all those old Irish songs. And they used to get you dancing the Irish jig, you know, and the Highland Fling.
Okay.
I don't know if you hear of that.
Was your mother a dance? Did your mom dance?
No.
Do traditional dances or?
No, but my aunt that came from County Clare, she used to give my sister and I money. Rita would do the Charleston and I'd do the Highland Fling.
Oh.
Neither one of us were that great. We got a nickel for it, so we would do it.
Okay. Did your mom or your aunt do any traditional Irish crafts like knitting? Anything like knitting?
No, they didn't. They made bread and made soda bread a lot.
Oh, okay.
And did Irish cooking like that.
Okay.
And my aunt taught my mother a lot of that because she had been in County Clare, you know.
Right.
A lot of Irish dishes.
Okay.
And like I told you, they used to always have ham and cabbage instead of corned beef and cabbage.
I see.
That was a big deal then in our day.
Right. Let's see. What could you tell us about, what are your recollections of, say, the makeup of the families in the neighborhood? Were there neighbors from all ethnic groups, or was it predominantly Irish? Or?
No, they were from different groups, but it was mostly Irish, although
okay.
we did have Serbians that lived next door to us and a couple of Austrian families
mm-hmm.
that came from, we called it Austria, but it was really Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, you know.
Okay.
Just a couple of them in our neighborhood. Koch Gallagher's, they were in our neighborhood.
Okay. So you're a Goose Towner,
yeah.
Correct?
Oh, yeah, very
yeah,
much.
Yeah. So what street did you live on when you were
young?
Well,
we lived 517 East Commercial when I was a child.
Okay.
But my father was born, and I told you, at Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved that house over on 1214 East 5th. They were really Goose Towners way down.
Okay.
And that was in the family for years. My Uncle Floyd Reardon lived there for years.
Okay. And, you know, someone listening to this might not even know what Carroll was.
Well, it was started in Anaconda where it was the smelter.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of Anaconda, you know, the copper smelter.
Yes.
There were still Indians around here when they did that. And then the people came to work on the old smelter and they just built houses around there and they called it Carroll.
Okay.
And I think they named that after a bishop, if I'm not mistaken. I think
okay.
it was Bishop Carroll or something.
Okay. And then eventually that little community was...
Came into Anaconda.
Right. But you said that your uncle that had a house moved from the old Carroll town site?
It was the Reardon house that was moved, my dad's home.
Okay.
It still sits down at 1214 East 5th. They'd be remodeled it a little bit, but it was original.
Okay.
After all those years. My dad worked at the old smelter when he was 14 years old. He went to work at the Carroll. He only worked a year when they built the new one down in where
okay.
it is now. The
okay,
hill.
The Washoe smelter mm-hmm. on the hill. Okay. So your father worked at the old works on
for,
the other side of the valley.
For 1 year, started working when he was 14.
Okay, okay.
Went to work to help really support the family. They
okay.
needed more.
Okay.
Everybody had large families in those days. A lot of people did mm-hmm. in Goose Town.
Well, that would probably explain why most people who are describing what Anaconda was like during their childhood
mm-hmm.
say that there were lots of kids in
yeah.
the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What were some of the names from your neighborhood, the family names from your neighborhood?
Oh, there was the, our neighborhood, I always thought it was quite a neighborhood. A couple doors up above from us were the McCarthys, and they had one, their oldest son ended up in New York as the chief of police. They had a son in the FBI, two sons in the FBI,
oh.
and a daughter. And a crowd, then there was, when I was young, then there was the Payettes, John, Putt Payett,
mm-hmm.
and he was from Youngstown, I think. Of course, this was after World War II.
Right.
And then there was this, up on the corner were the Spalls, and they were Austrian. They were from Yugoslavia, the mother and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, across the street, there was the Garveys, and then there was the Totters lived in our fit neighborhood, too.
Okay.
And the Martins, that's how George and I grew up together, my husband. And
okay, so you came from the same neighborhood.
Right. I was, Betty, his sister and I were the best of friends.
Oh.
I was six years, and she was five when they moved on in that neighborhood.
Okay.
And we were together until the day she died, and she died when she was 80 years old.
Okay, okay.
And then there was the Burnses, and then there was Mrs. Nibby, and oh God, there were a lot of Irish people across the street, and the Gallaghers,
mm-hmm.
and the O'Neills, there was O'Neills.
Okay.
Mostly Catholic, too, mostly Catholic.
Okay, so, yeah, so even those, maybe those immigrants who didn't share the same nationality might have shared the same parishes.
The same faith.
So there was that level of community,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah. I had a, oh, what, do you remember, what, you know, say growing up, where did your family shop or buy groceries?
Yeah, with the, Steve Trevovich had a store on East Park Street.
Okay.
Across the street from the Club Honor, where that Buick is.
Oh,
used to be
the building,
store.
And I think it's still on the side. You can still kind of see faintly something about a meat market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve Trevovich's meat market. And during the Depression, you charged there. He carried people.
Oh, okay.
And you'd never get that nowadays.
So,
you know, when they lost their jobs and stuff.
Right.
And then we traded at the Washoe Market, which was later.
Okay.
Came up on Park Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Safeway came. But that came after I think I was in grade school.
Okay.
And Safeway started the story.
Okay.
And they traded there. And there were a lot of little stores.
Yeah, I've...
Larson's and
yeah.
Murphy's and all those little tiny stores.
Right. And some of those stores actually were they
Wises.
Were part of the home, wasn't
yeah.
like the
yeah.
like
well,
the
front
part.
Well, they lived in, yeah, and my sister, Rita, in Opportunity, you know, the Solons. Rita
mm-hmm.
was married to Dover Solon, and they took over that store when they got married, and they lived on the side of it.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people lived right in Larson's store. They lived there. They had the place above.
Right, right.
And Murphy's lived in behind their store.
Okay. Yeah. What do you remember of the, I know that Anaconda once upon a time had a bustling downtown area. Were there any stores or shops that were particular favorites of yours?
Oh, yeah, they had Strain's big department store that was beautiful across the street from St. Paul's Church.
Oh.
And they had Moran's on Main Street was another department store. And Schwartz's,
mm-hmm.
which was very famous, they were... That and then Goldwater's, the shoe store, lots of businesses around, little ones around town.
Right, right. Let's see. And you mentioned that in addition to completing high school in Anaconda, then you went to, you attended nursing school.
In Great Falls. Columbus Hospital.
Right.
Providence.
And would you... like to just share a little bit of information of maybe your experiences when you were a nurse in the military?
Yeah. In the military?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was when I was at Camp Lockett, you know, I went to Camp Lockett with the first one. That was in between San Diego and El Centro. And it was the colored boys, the 10th and 28th Cavalry. And the enlisted men were all colored, black boys. And the service people were all white, the officers and the hospital and so forth. And it, they had the horses were even there. They used to have the mounted reviews. It was really something. And when we were there, we were supposed to go to Camp White before we went overseas to get our training to go overseas. And our colonel asked if we could stay, two nurses and I were, that were going over. And they, we had our training at Camp Lockett. We had to go through the infiltration course. And we also went on hike, had to go hikes. And we, they'd be hiking along, they'd holler, and we'd have to flop on the ground. To learn all that kind of stuff. We went through all that kind of training. And then with the, we, the hospital was a, was four wards. It was about a, I think we, it held about, I would say around 90 patients. And we, they would take, the boys would come in from being injured, you know, from training and so forth, and then nail and stuff is the kind of work we did, surgeries. But there had a lot of fires in California at that time too, up in the mountains. And once one weekend they brought in 80 Marines that were caught in a canyon up there. And they were actually baked rather than burned skin. It was more their organs and stuff. That was quite a, an ordeal for us. And we only had them for we have, well, some of them died that night, and then the others that were injured real bad, they see the Marines go with the Navy. So San Diego sent up a bunch of ambulances in about 3 days and took them all out, went to the big hospital in San Diego. We had them about a week. There, that was a, really a, quite an experience for us.
I'll bet.
Because they had to have IVs and they had to be... lots of surgery, you had to have the skin, you know, taken off, some of them and stuff. It was quite bad. That was, to me, the worst that we did there. And then, of course, overseas, I worked in a station hospital because our, when we went overseas, our enlisted men and officers had to build our house. We had our hospital. We had Quonset huts. They had to do all that, and in the meantime, we volunteered in the station hospitals that were on the island. And the field hospitals. And they were all boys that were brought in from the battles.
So
paraplegics and lots of wounds and stuff.
Do you have you stayed in touch with any of the other nurses you worked with?
I did,
in the service.
The one that I was with me, Camp Lockett, she and I both went in with the 80th General, and we were very good friends up until she died just a few years ago. She was in Seattle. Her name was Frances Sutcliffe. She was from Kansas.
And then I imagine because you've lived in Anaconda all your life that you've also managed to stay in touch with.
We had,
that you went to high school with and those types of
at
things.
At one time we had what we called the Catholic Nurses Organization here that we belonged to. And that broke up. But yeah, we, I've stayed with a lot of nurses from Anaconda, graduated from Columbus. That I've been in touch with. Mary Alice Fink was the one, she's still living. Magnus is her name now.
I knew who you were talking about, and as soon as you mentioned that
she was
Magnus,
a year older
I knew
than
who,
I
had,
a year ahead of me. At, she's the same age, but a year ahead. At nurses training.
And you mentioned earlier that your parents belong to the Hibernians, so maybe it would be a good time to kind of take a look at some of these little prompts here about some of those things that were particularly Irish in Anaconda. And you have identified yourself as someone who belonged to a recognizable Irish
Mama
community.
Mama was the president in 1924 and 25, I believe it was. And we used, they used to have dances there a lot throughout the year. It was a hall they owned. And they had what they called the little hall and the big hall. And in the little hall they'd have the old dancing like Hayes's used to have the... violins and stuff, and they would play the Irish music in the little hall. And then in the big hall, they'd have a band. And they'd be going at the same time, like on St. Patrick's Night, and different, so the, three or four times a year.
the traditional music in the smaller hall.
Well, you do more of the Irish dance than they would do there.
Okay.
And the big hall was more of the ballroom dancing and stuff.
Okay.
And then they'd have parties. They'd have parties for the kids, you know. We'd go up and they'd have Christmas time and different times, Halloween and all that kind of stuff. And they were very active at that time.
Right.
Kind of like they're doing now. They've got back to being real active again.
So was the membership fairly large when you were growing up?
Yes, it was real large. And when all that stopped was when the Depression came.
Oh, okay.
So about 32.
Okay.
30.
So prior to that, it was a pretty vital and active.
Yes, very active, yes.
Right. And could you maybe compare for someone who's not familiar, like maybe what was St. Patrick's Day like when you remember that as you were young, compared to what some of the things we do or don't do now?
It's very much about the same. They'd have a parade, but the parades would be bigger.
Okay.
They'd always have bands and stuff like that in the parade. And of course, it's like it is now. All the politicians would be walking and stuff.
Okay.
And they'd give away things, you know. And their parties, Christmas parties and stuff, they'd give candy to the kids, makeup, socks, and stuff like that. And they did charitable stuff, too.
Okay.
They'd help people that needed help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd take up collections and that. They'd have meetings. And they were too, I don't know if they were so, they were pretty political, I would say, too, kind of the Hibernians at that time.
Okay. As far as St. Patrick's Day proper goes,
They would have mass.
Okay.
You always had mass. You
know? Okay.
That always started everything.
Okay. And did they do what we do today, which is the members would
They
walk
did more.
To church
they would have a dance. Always have the two dances would go on. St. Patrick's would be the big night for the dancing, and that would go on until 2 and 3 in the morning.
Okay.
And banquets. They would have a banquet
prior to the dance. Mm-hmm. Right. As far as say the breakfast that we hold after mass, were the breakfasts back then kind of similar?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same thing, people introducing themselves around the room and...
Well, as kids, we didn't go, just like they don't now.
Okay,
you know,
right.
We didn't really go, but they did that, yes.
Okay.
And give talks. They'd have people talk, and then at the banquets, they'd have some big, very prominent person come and talk.
Okay. Well, when did you join the ladies' it was probably the auxiliary when you first joined, was it?
Yeah, when I joined, it was Tom died. Well, in 61, I joined in about 61.
Okay.
Right after, Tom was at Hibernian too.
Okay.
And I kind of think I joined before Tom, but I can't remember, but I think I let it go and then went back in 61.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I'm not exactly sure which direction to take here. But you know, we talked a little bit about say the Irish traditions related to the Hibernians. But yes, that was one thing that I meant to based on our pre-interview talk. If you could kind of describe. And you know, imagine that someone knows nothing about this. If you could describe what that traditional Irish wake in Anaconda was like.
Well, they would bring the, you'd take the person that died, would go to the funeral home and be prepared and everything, you know. And then they'd bring the casket and the person down to the home.
Okay.
And place them in the home wherever usually was the front room or sometimes they would take the table out of a dining room, put them in the dining room, and you'd put the kneel reflector down and all that. And then they'd put a wreath usually on the door. I don't know why, but sometimes they did that. And the people would just come in then and visit like you do in the funeral parlors now. Stay a little longer sometimes. The people would start coming like through, you know, the day, not so much during the day, but in the evening, and then some would stay all night. And the men would usually sit in the kitchen, And the women would just sit around visiting, you know. It would be more like a visiting stuff. And then they'd eat. You'd put on, women would come in, neighbors, and they would fix a lunch for everybody, and then they would make coffee, and they would eat, and they'd have drinks for the men, you know, in the kitchen and stuff like that. And it would last a couple of days.
Oh, my goodness. And so this was, this all went on between the time the person was brought back to the home from the undertakers
and
until
then,
the funeral.
Then they take him from the home to the church.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was really, and it just was something, I think that must have been the way they did it in Ireland.
And you mentioned in particular two wakes when we first visited. One was an aunt, and then you talked about a mother and child.
Oh, that was Mary Alice Young's mother. That I was in first grade when she died, and she died at birth, and they buried the child and the baby together. And of course, we went up because it was such a, really something to have that mother and child in it. And I can remember we left school, and we didn't ask anybody. Some of us just walked up.
Okay.
Wanted to see the baby. And that stuck out in my mind. It was one thing I always remembered. It was in the East End somewhere, like up on Alder Street or one of those streets, you know.
Okay. And this mother that died was the mother of a girl you were in school with?
Well, Mary Alice was the oldest. There was Mary Alice and... I think there were five or six children, and they were raised by a maiden aunt on West 3rd Street, Harlan's lived, Peggy Harlan.
Yes.
That's where Auntie lived, and that's where those kids were raised at. And their sister Betty was killed in an accident. She was married to Dover Solon, my sister's husband.
Okay.
Reed and Dover married after. She was the oldest.
Okay.
And she was in grade school when her mother died, I think. And then they sent her over to the convent in the Great Falls for a while.
Okay. And then I think you also mentioned, and maybe it was an aunt that died in 1932?
My sister was killed in 32.
Oh, your sister. Okay.
My sister Marie, my oldest sister. She was 19.
Okay.
And she was waked at home.
And the wake was held at home?
And there were four of them that were killed in Silver Lake, and all four of them were waked at home.
Okay.
And all they were buried then at St. Peter's.
Okay. Do you recall about, you know, maybe how long this practice went on in Anaconda?
The wakes, you
mean? The wakes, yeah, at the homes versus...
They went on until until 40. My uncle was buried at home, too, and he died in 41.
Okay, so at least that.
So
at least
beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were waking them. When Tom died, they were starting. He died in, when George died, he was killed in 51.
Okay.
So must have been, they must have stopped them in the 40s.
Okay.
Because he was at the undertaking parlor.
Okay. Let's see. And I think we kind of covered the fact that, those were the funeral traditions, and there was something else. Oh, you did mention briefly that your aunt had a lot of traditional Irish recipes, and you mentioned something about boiled ham and cabbage versus cabbage.
And food recipes, for medicine stuff. Every spring you got molasses and sulfur and molasses, I think it was. Some kind of a tonic.
Oh, in the spring?
Yes. Oh, God, it was awful.
Ah.
They'd give you an orange when you take it. Yeah, it's supposed to help you for colds and that.
Okay.
And castor oil. Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
Was quite a... What treat they used. You were asking about medicine.
Yeah, traditional cures. Yeah. I know my grandmother was a great, she swore by Vicks
and Vicks Vapo
Rub. Vicks Vapo Rub, yes.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Yes. So these recipes that your aunt had from County Clare, anything specific? Were there any baked goods or?
Not that I can think of. Okay. Well, though, to Tipperary squares, you know how they always make those.
Right. Soda bread, those types of things.
I don't think they had too much, really. I think, well, you know, their big thing in Ireland at that time when they was potatoes, and that's why it was so horrible when they had the famine.
Yeah, that's true.
The
that's
English true. Really held them down terrible. If you, the Catholics, it was awful.
That's true.
We had a priest that taught psychology when we were in nurses training. Father, what was his name? Finnegan or something. He was Irish anyway. Name. He used to say to us, the reason the sun doesn't shine and set in England is God wouldn't trust it in the dark.
Oh. that's an interesting... That's an interesting joke or twist.
He was serious.
Yeah, I'm sure he was serious.
He'd get so mad.
Yeah.
Father McHugh, that was his name. McHugh, I knew he had an Irish name.
Okay. Do you remember any, I've heard people mention certain Irish priests that were in Anaconda. Do you remember any Irish priests that were
Father
stationed
Tracy
in Anaconda?
Was there when we were young. He used to come in and we used to pay, we only charged, they only, St. Peter's, $1 a month.
Oh, to go to school?
Yeah.
Oh.
And half the time you didn't have that if you came from a large family.
Right.
And he used, Father Tracy used to come in, we used to like him, he'd sing for us, sing songs.
Oh.
And he'd come in and tell us, now don't forget your tuition. And Father Pierna would too.
Okay. And then, Father Pierna was the Austrian priest,
yeah,
correct?
Oh Lord, he was here for years. And then I was trying to think of there was a Father Finnegan, and there was a Father, who else was here then? Father, they sang it all the time that lived here. Donald.
Oh, okay.
He was here for a long time.
Okay.
Father Lowney, they were all Irish.
Yeah, they were.
I think Gilmore was Irish too, and a lot of Irish priests here, an awful lot.
I think so too. Do you recall anyone using the Irish language when you were growing up in any of these Irish families?
Not really. They used to some expressions once in a while, but not very much.
Okay.
Now, Mary Laughlin's family did, but they used to go back to Ireland.
Right, and too, I think maybe that might kind of might depend on whether it was a person's, if they were first generation second or third.
Her mother was from Ireland, right from Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
Although the Burnses were too, and I don't think they ever spoke
right.
it.
And then too, it probably was a matter of which region that they came from.
I would think so,
Being, Irish might have been more common in one area than another.
I don't think they did it. Maybe from a... Antrim was kind of it. I think Antrim was in the north.
Okay. Did your Irish family have any particular superstitions or those types of stories?
Put a hat on the bed, it would bring bad luck. Oh. If the birds flew in your house, something would happen. And oh, good Lord, Irish were horrible that way. And if you don't look out the window if somebody was leaving, because that wasn't good, you didn't want to see the car drive away.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah, I thought some of the stuff was great.
Huh.
Irish tea leaves are supposed to be against the religion fortune, but they used to always serve tea and read the leaves.
Oh. Did anyone ever read your tea
sure,
leaves?
Sure, my mother would do, but my mother would make it up. We all knew that. She'd be telling us the big handsome guys were coming at the doors and all that.
Oh, I see.
But we used to sit around the table at night and we'd laugh. She would make tea. And you didn't have tea bags, so you'd pour tea and you'd get the tea leaf. And
okay.
If they were in the bottom with some breadcrumbs, if you happened to put a cookie or something in them and you had crumbs with the tea leaves, that was money. And
oh, okay. I see.
And so, they did that in Ireland too.
And so did your mom, and did she, when it wasn't just, having fun with the kids, would she read tea leaves with her friends or?
Well, they'd want her to. They'd come down and want her to,
Okay.
Sometimes she did. She'd say, it makes them feel. She'd make up stuff. She'd tell you that herself. Makes them feel better, she'd say.
I see.
I'd laugh at her.
Okay.
But my aunt went, when she went to Ireland in 28, my mother's older sister went back to Ireland, and she married, I told you, a man that was born and raised in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And his older brother got the farm in Ireland. And when they went back, 48 aunt or 28 aunt, Mamie used to say, she'd tell the people, oh, your house is going to be lovely when it's finished. They never had no ceilings or anything in their homes.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have any floors. They had that, I think they called it peat or something. It looked like tar on their floors.
Oh, okay.
Is what it was made up of. And they had no stoves or anything. They'd have fireplaces that was burnt wood, and it burned peat too. I think that stuff you could burn.
Okay.
I think they clock it's kind of P-E-E-T or something it was called, I think.
Okay.
And no indoor bathrooms or anything.
Okay.
And she thought it was awful when she first went there. She thought she couldn't be able to stay. You know?
So she had a few more luxuries here in the 40s,
Lord,
compared
but
to
but she said she had so much fun. The people, she said, were so wonderful. They would sit around in these stoves at night and they'd tell ghost stories.
Oh.
About the leprechauns and stuff like that, you know, makeup stories.
Oh.
And smoke.
Oh.
And even women smoke, she said.
I see.
Huh. Well, I guess they had to do something.
And so that was their entertainment. Yeah.
She said to Ireland, whereas when they visited his brother on the farm, they grew their own vegetables, but they didn't have much, you know.
Right, kind of a simple life, probably.
Very, very simple.
I see. And have you ever made a trip to Ireland?
Yes. And when I was 75 years old, my kids gave me a trip to Ireland. My sister and I went, Charlotte and I.
Oh.
And we went on a tour with the Brents, and it was wonderful.
How was it?
I just loved it, and it was so much different than what, you know, now.
Mm-hmm.
That was, what, 50? Well, I'm going to be 91 in a couple of weeks, so it was 15, 16, 17 years ago or so.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed it.
You did?
Mm-hmm. And, it's beautiful. I think very beautiful.
I've been there, and I think
and
it's
that 40
too.
Shades of green is really true.
It is.
The mountains, you know, and the hills are rolling hills and
right
lakes.
What was your favorite part of the trip?
All of it. All of it. I just loved it everywhere we went.
Okay.
The countryside I liked, of course, I think better than the Dublin and the cities,
right,
you know.
Right,
the
yeah.
Littler places. And friendly, all. And the food was outrageous. We stayed at Bread and Breakfast.
Okay.
And that was fun because you got to know the people, you know, and they
right.
were very friendly and real good food and everything.
Good. Okay, well, you know, let me just double check here to see if there was anything in particular. One thing that I would like, you know, just personally would like to know, because for that period of time when between the time that George died and you remarried, you were a single mother
8 years
for a stretch of time there. Mm-hmm. Do you think that living in a close-knit Irish community or a small town like Montana that was an ideal place to be if you were in that situation?
Yeah, much better than if you'd be in a big city or anything. Oh, yeah. I needed lots of help then, you know.
Right.
And people were good. Like, everybody was working in the family. Flo was teaching at St. Paul's, and they were just building the station at that time. And it was George's idea to make it a 24-hour station.
Uh-huh.
And it was, so Grandma was working there all the time. But so the neighbors helped. I mean, it wasn't relatives as much as they could. They in the evening helped.
Okay.
But neighbors were good. There was no daycares in those days.
Okay. And so did you work as a nurse during
no,
that period of time?
No, I managed not to. I told them I wouldn't. I couldn't leave. I said even if I did, because the babies were just babies.
And George was three
years old.
Yeah.
And I said I couldn't go off and leave. So I said, if I have to, I'll go on welfare, because we didn't really have the money then. And it was George's idea to start the station. They already started it.
Right.
So they were waiting. I had put my insurance that I got, I put into the station at that time.
Okay.
And they did pay me interest on it each month, which I needed to live on. And then my Social Security with the three kids was only $90.
Right. And this would be the Anaconda Service Station, correct?
Yeah.
And that's the corner of Park and Birch.
Birch, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it was a bad, it was, so yeah, oh yeah, I think it's a smaller town, really.
Okay, okay.
Because people knew you, and people were awfully good, you know.
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, given that, what do you think has been the biggest change in Anaconda that you've seen over the course of your life?
Well, smaller closed and okay. More people, older people dying and younger people, and then I think nowadays mothers all work. They don't have that closeness of neighborhoods really visiting and stuff.
Okay.
Because you're working all day, they get home and
right.
You don't have time.
Exactly.
And I think that clubs even stopped, you know, through that time. Now I think they're starting a little more. I mm-hmm. think the Hibernians, that people are joining it more or less because it is a chance to get out and do something.
Right, right.
Okay. More so than the Elks and stuff, you know.
Okay.
Although the Elks used to have terrific crowds, too.
True, true. So I think maybe that this might be a good place to conclude the interview with this, maybe this last question. And you just, whatever you feel like contributing to this, I'll just plain old ask you the question from the page. If you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what would you want someone in the future to know about the Irish in Montana?
The faith.
Okay.
I think of myself, of everything, that's my idea of it, is the Irish, I think, of all nationalities, had more faith than any I've ever known. And they did, and still yet, I think, have faith. And I don't see how a person could live without it. I really don't. You have to go through stuff to realize that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is one of the great things that the Irish did to give to the people, that their deep, 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 deep faith they have.
Okay.
To me, that's the biggest contribution they can give.
And I would agree with you. So.
And then they had their sense of humor. And those are things that you just have to have, and I do think they have a terrific sense of humor.
I think so, too.
You know, of all.
Okay.
Contributions, really.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great place to conclude the interview, and thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you bet. Well,
all right.
I hope I can